the farm-to-table movement ushers in locally grown foods to restaurant guests, and now a lake-to-plate effort aims to add fresh, ethically sourced fish to your next restaurant meal. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk with our guest reporter about this effort to put more locally and more sustainable seafood choices on the menu in Wisconsin restaurants. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Lindsay Christians, a fine arts and food writer for the Capital Times. She reports on dining trends, writes restaurant reviews, and hosts the food podcast, The Corner Table. Good morning. Thanks very much for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, a lot of us are familiar with farm to table. You can go to farmers markets and buy food that was grown at the farm down the road and make that at home, or restaurants will make it for you at the restaurant. But is the same thing going on with fish?
So that was what was interesting to me, is how a lot of our local chefs who really prize this kind of farm-to-table ethos, the connection to how the food is grown and who's growing it, and, you know, that really strong relationship between farmer and chef, in our case, farmer and cook, and how they were applying that to something that's sourced hundreds, sometimes thousands of miles away, in the case of Alaskan salmon. So I was really interested to kind of see, when we're thinking about the food movement as a whole, how these kinds of principles would apply to something that where you're not going to meet your fishermen usually. If it's a fisherman in Alaska, you're not going to know kind of where, you know, those shrimp or those mussels are coming from exactly. In the same way that, like, I can go to Milton and I can go to Rootstown Community Farm where I get my vegetables and I can see where those vegetables are being grown. So that's kind of the impetus for the story, for, you know, why I wanted to look into that.
Yeah, well, that makes some sense. And fish is less accessible at something like a farmer's market, for the most part, but you can go to the fish market at the grocery store.
For sure, yeah. But I think the difference is, right, is where we live here in Madison, and in actually most of Wisconsin, right? Most of us are not going to be as close to Lake Superior or Lake Michigan, but we do have some of these locally sourced fish. So one of the first things that I wanted to look into was some of the fish that's coming from the waters that are closest to Wisconsin, so Lake Superior and Lake Michigan primarily. And there's a new program, or not, I guess not that new, but the last couple of years, through the UWC grant is doing a program called Eat Wisconsin Fish, and they're trying to encourage you and I, but also chefs and restaurants, to be looking to some of these local waters for more fish. So the trout and the whitefish that are coming from Lake Superior, it's mostly whitefish, I think, coming from Lake Michigan, maybe some walleye, and to kind of increase the strength of those connections. And at the same time, there are some new companies that are trying to increase that kind of the farmer chef style relationship, but now it's fisherman and chef's relationship, and trying to increase those bonds for chefs who may be living so much further away and they can't form those relationships quite as easily.
And you start the piece with a fisherman who is out on Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
And hauling in tons of whitefish for someone. For who?
Oh, so that's Paul LeClaire. He's with Susie Q, which is a fleet out in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And he and his family have been fishing for decades. A lot of these fishermen that I talk to, you know, they are part of these generations old fishing families who have been working, you know, as commercial fishermen and in the industry for just decades. But Paul, summer is a little bit less, I guess, abundant than some of the winter haul, but they'll haul in, you know, 2,000 to 4,000 pounds twice a week.
Wow.
Of whitefish. Yeah. And to me, that sounded like a lot. And he said, oh, it's actually about half of what we do in the winter. When I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, he said that they're starting to reach the end of their quota. So one of the things that makes these fisheries sustainable is that there are caps on how much fish you can bring in. So that's part of why they're only going out twice a week right now. And in other parts of the season, they might go out more often. But they leave 5 a.m. and they go and they bring in this big haul. Some of that fish is going to go overnight fresh to some Madison restaurants and other places, Milwaukee, and some other restaurants as well. Some of that fish goes to a company like Fortune Fish that's going to take the fish whole, process them into fillets, freeze them, you know, and then send them, you know, around to where whoever wants the fish. But he's got a bunch of distribution channels. And I think it was either he or Bill Bodine up at Bodine's Fisheries on Lake Superior who said, sell it or smell it.
Because that's one of the, that's got to be kind of hard for, I mean, it to really have fresh fish, it's truly got to be right from the lake. I guess they can flash freeze it.
They can flash freeze it. And they do that with salmon. Mm-hmm. I joined a salmon share a couple of years ago with Kwijak Salmon, which is a local guy who goes up to Alaska like once a year and fishes. And then what they do is they flash freeze these salmon and then they come to us in Madison, like on a slow boat, right? Because they've already been flash frozen. They're kind of in stasis. Mm-hmm. The freezing technologies are much better than they used to be. But there's also really strict rules about how you want to thaw that fish. Like you thaw it nice and slow overnight, because if you thaw it and you leave it out, like you'll see sometimes at fish counters, it starts to get mushy and then that's...
Yeah, that's gross. And
the
then people don't want to buy that.
Yeah.
Eat that. So... Back to the Lake Michigan and the whitefish there. Is that the only fish that is a lake-to-plate fish from Lake Michigan?
It's not. I mean, I feel like you hear kind of more about lake trout coming from Lake Superior. Lake Michigan, so Paul was a realist. He said just a few times, you know, it's a dying industry, and I'm familiar with that. But he talked about getting... changing people's perceptions of whitefish, because it is a good eating fish. It's high in oil. It's got a mild flavor, and that is kind of, I think, the majority of their catch. I mean, you can eat carp, for example. Most of us don't
want to. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that the challenge is just really getting people to understand, you know, how to eat whitefish when it's not smoked and in a dip.
Yeah. You know, I'll have to admit, I whitefish is the fish that they use for the Door County fish boil, I'm pretty sure. So some of that fish probably goes right to Door County. And it's not bad. I mean, if you like, you know, potatoes and and onions and you know, I mean, it's not real fancy,
right?
But it's okay. But so how is it? It's got kind of a bad reputation.
Well, it's just I think that we don't think of it. Bill Bodine, as I was mentioning him before, he talked about how it has kind of a generic name. It's hard to market
whitefish.
It. Yeah, and I think like if you look around. Wisconsin, we love our fish fries. Most of it's ocean fish, right? Yeah. Or you know, it's coming from Lake Erie, it's coming from Canada. So that was interesting to me that, you know, while we love our fish fries, most of that fish is, you know, either, you know, some of this unsustainable fish, right? Like that are being aggressively overfished because we love it so much that we're loving it to death. Or, you know, just coming from 80 to 90% of the fish that Americans eat is imported. So, you know, it kind of goes along with that.
Well, because back in the old days, and I'm old enough to know the old days, the Lake Perch was the fish fry fish of choice. And it's still out there, but it's not as common.
Right. Yeah.
And it's probably not Lake Perch from, you know, from the, certainly not from the inland lake at a Wisconsin resort somewhere.
No. Yeah. I think most of the perch that we get comes from Canada, so is imported. But that said, Great Lakes. I mean, I think of Great Lakes as being ours.
Yeah, that's true. That's local enough. Yeah.
I come from Lake Erie country, and so I do kind of think of that as still as part of. I don't know about local enough, but it's how we're trying to kind of apply these ideas of, you know, local ethical eating and sustainable eating, you know, across the board and, you know, in a more broad way. And I think that when we start to look at, you know, fish sustainability, it gets more complicated again because we can't see it. And also, you know, once the fish arrives on your plate, whatever's been done to it, you're like, well, I mean, maybe it started out as whitefish, but I can't tell what it is anymore.
So. Well, we have Chris on Facebook who says, I have a neighbor who's a fisher guy. He has so much fish in his freezer, he gives me five pound bags of bluegills. Well, I wish I was Chris.
Nice.
Lots of fishers do it for recreation. Food pantries rarely have fish. How about if fishers donate some of their catch? Well, that's not, though. We're not talking about the bluegills that we're catching in Lake Mendota, right?
But it's also, that's a really good point. I feel like one of the challenges with fish, right, is the minute it comes out of the water, the clock is ticking,
yeah.
Right? And it's the same for produce too, right? I wrote a story earlier this year about food waste in Madison and about, just the amount of food that we waste, which is extraordinary. But it kind of connects again to all of the fishermen that I talked to and the people selling fish and working in this industry. They were constantly talking about, like, you know, you got to use it. You got to find a market for it, because it doesn't matter if your fish is pristine and beautiful or whatever it is, if you don't have a buyer for it. And I think that's one of the challenges with food pantries too, right? Is just, yeah, the labeling needs to be, and knowing what it is.
I have to jump in because we do have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about Lake to Plate. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about sustainable fish and the Lake to Plate movement, or the Sea to Plate movement, where there is more of an effort to try to find ethically fished fish. And we are talking with our guest, Lindsay Christians, who is a fine arts and food writer for the Capital Times. She reports on dining trends and writes restaurant reviews and hosts the food podcast, The Corner Table. And she wrote a recent piece for the Capital Times. We have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Best Fish Forward. Sustainable fish is fresher, better, and easier to find than ever. And we talked some in our first segment about whitefish out of Lake Michigan and Lake Superior and how that's ending up on some restaurant menus in Wisconsin. But let's just take a step backward, Lindsay, and talk sustainable fish. What do we mean when we talk about sustainable fish?
So there are a couple of ways to measure that. When chefs and restaurants and you and I talk about sustainability in fishing, we're talking about what the fish is. So, you know, the specific, it's not just tuna. You know, you can kind of drill down and say, you know, bluefin tuna, big eye tuna, albacore tuna. You have the type of fish, how much is coming out of the water, how often, what time of year can affect a fish's mm-hmm. sustainability. So a certain fish that are sustainable certain times of year are not other times, because maybe they're spawning, for example, in the case of like salmon. Mm-hmm. If you're a salmon, go upstream on Friday. It's your good day. But also there are some new measures of sustainability with fish that are taking into account how the people who catch the fish are paid and treated. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a workers' rights and social justice element to it as well. The standard, the gold standard for figuring out whether a fish is sustainable and like, you know, a good choice to be eating is Monterey Bay. And Monterey Bay Seafood Watch has been around for many years. And I actually think they might have a phone app now, too. But a lot of restaurants use it. Festival Foods uses Monterey Bay. Metcalf's uses the Monterey Bay ratings. So if you go to the seafood counter there, you will see, you know, best choice or good alternative. And they've committed to not doing anything that's avoid, which is like the red label. And then the James Beard app and program that chefs have started to use and that consumers can use as well now, that's relatively new. That was launched officially in June. But that, again, takes into account the Monterey Bay ratings, ratings from NOAA, like National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, their ratings for, you know, the health of a fishery, and then also tries to take into account again that are the workers treated well? Are the people who are fishing and who are working in this fishery, being treated ethically? So it's kind of incorporating all of those ideas into, you know, kind of that one word, sustainable, but it's got a lot of parts, a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. And this might sound kind of crass, but who cares about sustainable fish? Who is, you know, and why should we care about sustainable fish?
We should absolutely care about sustainable fish. So the answer that I have to that is that something like 90% of the fisheries in the world are overfished, reaching capacity, it's literally sustainability is about things that will not be around if we don't protect the fisheries. So, you know, I feel like I go into a sushi restaurant and I see bluefin tuna on the menu, and it is, you know, it's on the menus here when they can get it in Madison. And I think, well, I could eat it now because it's going to be gone. Because literally it is unsustainable. But it's about sort of protecting these resources that we have, you know, so that our kids and our grandkids can enjoy some of these fish, not just sort of, you know, for the deliciousness of the fish, but also for the health of the ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, you know, and why is bluefin tuna on the menu if it is not sustainable? I mean,
that's an excellent question.
Do we want it to go away, or is there any way to... help it recover?
Well, and I think there's a lot of work being done around a lot of these fisheries. And, you know, this is one of those instances, right, where, you know, our regulations in the U.S. may be different than other countries. But the reason that it's on the menu, even though it's unsustainable, is because people want it. Mm-hmm. We want what we want, Americans more than most, yeah. And we want it when we want it. So,
well, what reasons do chefs give for putting more emphasis on either local fish or ethically sourced fish, sustainable fish?
So 2/3 of the fish that Americans eat is in restaurants. In terms of you know, global consumption, we're pretty low in terms of how much seafood, so both kind of fish and shellfish, we eat something like, I think on average it's 15.5 pounds a year, which is not that much.
That's less than a fish meal a week, it seems.
Yeah, it's about right. So yeah. You know, it's like a pound and a third maybe a month of just not that much fish. We don't eat a lot of fish, but the majority, like 80-90% of what we're eating is imported. But I think that it's interesting, like when you have, you know, 2/3 of the fish that we are eating, you know, in restaurants, that means chefs are powerful, right? It means that if they care about these ideas of, you know, being ecologically sound and, you know, people being treated well and, you know, these fisheries being protected, they can, you know, motivate change. And they can do it by saying, so maybe you don't eat a lot of whitefish. Well, I'm going to put this whitefish on my menu and I'm going to put beautiful tomato sauce on there and some capers and some nice fried toast or whatever you've got. And they can present it to you in a way that's got you eating, you know, making it more tempting, making it more accessible. There's some chefs locally in Madison who are putting fish on that maybe we haven't heard of before, or haven't eaten a lot of, but they can prepare them in a way and they can present them in a way that makes them compelling and makes them more accessible to diners.
And I would think diners have a lot of power here too by asking, you know, the where did this fish come from, or is this a sustainable fish? What do you say?
So as someone who asks a lot of questions, just like in life as well as in my work as a journalist, I try to make sure those questions are being directed at people who can best answer them. Yeah. That person is not always going to be your server. In some restaurants, sure. Right. There are some restaurants. I talked to Henry Doan over at Tempest, and he can talk quite a lot about, you know, where he gets the fish he gets, why he gets it, where it's coming from. But even he admitted, like, he runs 2 restaurants. He doesn't look at every box. So I would say that if you're really interested in you know, eating more sustainable fish, your best bet is to, you know, be going to that Monterey Bay Seafood Watch. You know, you can look there and see that most tuna is not sustainable. So then, you know, that, you know, that if you're looking at a menu and you've got certain options, or that, you know, that certain salmon that you're going to be getting is most likely farmed, you can make those farmed or fresh, whatever, you can make those choices, arm yourself with the information, I would argue, before you get there, because putting your server on the spot is not always going to be your best choice. You could ask, but sometimes you just end up kind of making a loop of, you know, them running
right
back to the chef.
And I guess I'm thinking, yeah, not to necessarily, you know, have a argue with your
server,
but maybe pass along to the server who comes to your table, you know what, you know, let the chef know, or let the manager or let the owner know that we'd love to see some sustainable fish on the menu or something like that.
For sure.
So you just mentioned salmon. and whether it's farmed or not, or whether it's should we that's sustainable, but is it as good, or, you know, for us?
Oh, the farmed salmon. Yeah. So there are so many opinions around salmon. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things I got the teeniest a tip of it writing about this. So there are these sort of robust and recovering and recovered salmon fisheries in Alaska. There's also an increased interest in aquaculture, so farmed salmon, kind of both here and internationally. There's a lot of stuff around farmed salmon, right, and controversy, because part of the complications of salmon is that, you know, they do live in a mix of fresh and salt water, right, and that there are, when you farm certain things, like when you farm a pig, right, you end up with things like antibiotics, and, you know, how, you know, they're all kept very close together. So, and there's, I think, been some pushback, right, about some farmed salmon then interacting with some of the wild populations and changing those. So that's a bit of a complicated thing. And I think so far the best that I've found has been wild-caught Pacific salmon. And there are ways to get it now in Wisconsin that are growing. Sitka Salmon, they said they've got about 800 shares. So individual people in Madison who are getting these shipments of salmon.
Just like a CSA box?
Like a CSA box. It's a CSF.
A CSF? I did. Oh, wow. That's really neat.
It's really cool. So I reported on a new one a couple of years ago. I guess a year or two ago. Quijack Salmon. And I wrote the story, and then I thought, I want to do this. I have to do this. So, and salmon's expensive, so I ended up splitting it with three other people. But we got these just gorgeous, like, big sides of salmon from Alaska, and they did the shipment in September. And you know, I grilled it, and I did, you know, I made it into like poke, you know, those Hawaiian style poke bowls. And I just had a great time working with the salmon. But it's beautiful. There's also salmon coming out of Juneau. Taku River Reds is what Sea to Table works with. Sea to Table is kind of a middleman, for the lack of a better description. They kind of connect, you know, chefs and individual people with fishermen all over the country. Salmon's just one. They also work with the guys in Two Rivers. Sea to Table does. But they have just started individual shipments. So, like, if you are in love with this salmon that you had at the restaurant, some of those things you can then get shipped to your own house.
We are talking about sustainable fish and finding sustainable fish, and the movement to provide more sea to plate fish. We are talking with Lindsay Christians, a fine arts and food writer for the Capital Times. She wrote a piece, Best Fish Forward, Sustainable Fish is Fresher, Better, and Easier to Find Than Ever. And we are welcoming your questions for her. And I'd like to know if it matters to you, if the fish you eat is sustainable. Do you buy fish at the market that is ethically caught or harvested? Do you look for that on your restaurant menus? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And I'm not sure any chefs are listening right now, but if you are, do you take advantage of this lake-to-plate movement? What are the advantages of it? What are the drawbacks? How do you try to incorporate more sustainable fish into your menus? We'd love to hear from you. We do have some calls coming in, but it was more about Wisconsin fish in Wisconsin inland lakes. You didn't deal with that in this piece, did you, Lindsay?
Not too much, no. And I think that because again, like the chefs and restaurants are powerful in terms of, like, changing what we think about with sustainability and fish. I kind of wanted to focus on that. But one of the things that's interesting is that I talked to many chefs for this piece, and one of them was saying, you know, do people even care? You know, and trying to get people, like, aware of it, right? There was a great conversation I had with Tori Miller, who's a chef at L'Etoile and probably our most well-known chef here in Madison. And he said, you know, you have people asking all these these questions about the chicken. Where did the chicken come from? How was it raised? You know, what farm did it come from? And then, you know, turning around and going out for sushi and just saying, oh, all the fish comes from the ocean, you know, and kind of turning off that part of your brain that says, you know, these things are important. And the other aspect of this, you know, whether you're buying the fish yourself or you're getting it in a restaurant, it's expensive. It's expensive. Seat at Table was saying that Lindsay over at Seat at Table was saying, you know, we're a great third best option. First best is the fish you caught yourself.
Yeah.
Second best is the fish that you bought from the fisherman on, like, off the boat at the dock, right? And she said, but we're a good third best, right? So, you know, there's again that that connection with, you know, where something comes from. And I think in Wisconsin we have those very strong connections to the food we grow, and, you know, our meats and our grains and our produce. But we've kind of, in many ways, we've sort of lost that connection to the fish that we eat.
Yeah. So, but you are seeing, at least from the perspective of these Wisconsin chefs, an effort to try to bring us that sustainable fish, more sustainable fish.
Absolutely. And I think, again, I think it comes to, you know, if you're applying these ethics and these ideas of, you know, it matters that, you know, this food is sustainably raised, that this food comes from a farm that's going to continue to exist, right, for the next decades, however long, that you know, we're going to create a system that can continue for our children and our grandchildren, that not applying those principles to seafood, to fish and to shellfish, it felt disingenuous, I think, to a lot of chefs. But also, there's the basic fact that these are really good products, that these are just beautiful fish, and that they like working with good products. It's easier to make a good dish with a good ingredient.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about this, and we have just a couple of minutes before news time now, but as you mentioned, not all fish will stay fresh long enough to get it to Wisconsin. So are we saying that frozen fish is just like fresh fish?
In some situations, yeah. So there are some. For example, South Padre Seafood is based out of Janesville. They're doing mostly fresh, wild-caught, and domestic fish, right? And they're sourcing it from all over. They're getting it from Florida and from the Gulf. They're sourcing, you know, fish from all over the place. But and they're shortening that supply chain so it gets to us faster. But a fish out of the water, depending on the fish, I mean, 7 to 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. That you've got on that fish. The technology now behind flash freezing has made it so that a lot of these fish, you know, we can get them right off the boat and we can keep them longer.
We are talking with Lindsay Christians. She is a writer for the Capital Times. She reports on dining trends and she writes restaurant reviews, and she also hosts the food podcast, The Corner Table. We're talking with her about her recent piece, Best Fish Forward, Sustainable Fish is Fresher, Better, and Easier to Find Than Ever. And we are welcoming your questions for her and your own preferences. How often do you eat fish? And when you go to a restaurant, do you ask, where did the fish come from? Do you see enough locally caught or sustainable fish on the menu? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the Lake to Plate movement, or the sea-to-table movement. We are welcoming your questions and your experiences for our guest food writer, wondering if sustainable fish matters to you, whether if it matters to you if this this fish is caught locally, such as in the Great Lakes. Do you like whitefish? Do you care if your fish is wild-caught or farmed? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. If you see tuna on a menu, do you get it even if you know it's not sustainable? How come? Let's see if somebody will call in with that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I am so glad that Mallory and Madison called in because this was going to be a question for this segment. Hi, Mallory.
Hi.
Yes, so what is your question?
So I was just curious, we're talking about sustainability, and especially with fish, I feel like this is kind of a middle ground. There's vegetarian and pescatarian and vegan, and I personally went vegan for a little while because of the sustainability. And I'm very lucky that my boyfriend and I fish, and I always told myself, even when I was quote-unquote vegan, that if we caught the fish, I was okay with it, because the reason that I wanted to eat that fresh caught fish was because it was sustainable. We weren't getting it from, you know, nets that were catching things that weren't fish. And so I just wanted to ask our speaker today if she's seen that movement where people are eating sustainably and not just plant-based.
That's absolutely true. It's come to a point where when someone tells me that they're a vegetarian, I ask, but what about fish? Like, do you also eat fish? The pescatarian idea. And I think it's because fish has a lot of health benefits. I mean, I didn't go into that too much in this piece, but fish is really good for us. And I feel like there's that tension, right? Because, our government's saying, you know, we want you to eat more fish because it's very good for you and healthy. But at the same time, you know, the government, another part of the government is saying we're overfishing cod and tuna and things like that, you know, to literal like extinction won't be around anymore. So, I feel like that's a kind of natural tension. When I talked to Kathleen Klein at the UWC grant, I was asking her, like, you know, what is the future of this, right? What's the future of this? And she said that, you know, she really thinks that the future is farmed, that the future is going to be farmed fish. But it's also going to be fish that maybe we don't eat as much of right
like
now.
That.
Yeah. So, for example, like some of the smaller fish, I feel like it's a great example of saying like fish that you're catching yourself, you know, you kind of where it comes from. You know the kind of the regulations of the lake that you're fishing on, and you're not going to be catching it if you're not permitted to. But for example, different kinds of rockfish. Francesco Mangiano over at Osteria Papavero here in Madison likes to work with a lot of cephalopods, so squid.
Okay, I was
and
gonna
cuttlefish.
Say, what is
that? Yeah, octopus. Mm-hmm. So cephalopods. Mm-hmm. So things like that. He likes to work with kind of lesser known fish. One thing that you'll notice happening as certain things become overfished and not available, you'll see rebranding of fish. So, for example, out of Lake Superior, there's eel pout or burbot. I'm not probably not saying that correctly. B-U-R-B-O-T. It's also known as eel pout, but apparently it's also known as lake cod.
Well, see, lake cod sounds much more appealing than eel
pout.
Something.
Yeah. And so that cracked me up a little bit because it's this kind of rebranding of like.
Well, because then you will, I mean, if eel pot or whatever, or beer butt, if I mean, that doesn't sound appealing, but if it tastes decent and it comes out of Lake Superior, why not? I'll probably order lake cod. That would be easier to stomach.
For sure. I mean, it can backfire on us. We renamed the Patagonian toothfish Chilean sea bass, and then we ate it to death. It's not available usually anymore because we just kind of decimated the fishery because Chilean sea bass is delicious, right?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, now kind of mostly gone.
And I also thought Mallory was going to bring up not just that she's a pescatarian and was concerned about some of the fish that was maybe catching sea turtles or something in the nets or whatever, you know, other things that were being caught in the nets.
Yeah, bycatch.
Yeah. And that's a part of whether a fish
Absolutely.
Is ethically caught too,
yeah.
Right?
So, and that actually happened. There was a local restaurant a few years ago who had been that had been serving skate wing, and the way I think it was just the way that skate wing was being caught was like these bottom trawlers where you just kind of drag the nets along the bottom, and you get a lot of stuff you're not intending to get when you do it that way. And you can I mean, they can regulate it, right? They can adjust the size of the holes, for example. They can kind of control how much they're catching and pull things out and whatever. There's also a certain amount of allowed bycatch for a lot of these things. But so they took skate wing off the menu. People were upset and, you know, sad that the Skate Wing was gone. And then a few years later, you know, it's Monterey Bay says it's actually, you know, being well regulated, it's being caught in a better way, and there are better ways to get it, and now it's back on the menu. Yeah. So when something becomes unsustainable, it's not necessarily forever, right? There are certain kinds of Atlantic tuna line caught that are, you know, becoming, that are more sustainable, that we can still, you know, enjoy. But again, it has to do with making sure that those fisheries are being handled in a way that makes sure they're going to be around.
Yeah. Mallory was also going to mention, and maybe she just decided not to, that you could make, there are a lot of fish imports from, you know, from Asia or all over the world, when we could be at least looking a little bit closer to the waters, closer to home. And that's a whole part of your piece.
Yeah. So I was trying to really pin that number down. It's somewhere between 80% and 90% of the fish that we eat in the U.S. is imported. And most of the fish that we raise and catch is exported. So we're sending all our fish away and we're importing our fish because we like it. We like it inexpensive. It's cheaper, right? So if you get, you know, shrimp from Southeast Asia, there was a huge, huge scandal a few years ago about how it was being caught by slaves, right? Yeah. And it was a big piece in The Guardian. I didn't get into that in this piece, but there's inexpensive, very, very inexpensive fish that can be found from, you know, imported. And, you know, you go out for a fish fry, you go out for fried shrimp at, you know, Red Lobster, you're not going to want to pay. That's kind of, you mentioned earlier, you know, what are the downsides? Well, one of the downsides is it's expensive, right? It's expensive to, and it's expensive when you're trying to eat sustainably land-based things too, that these things come with a price. And I think that, you know, as our food system changes and as we, you know, as the food movement continues to gain traction, one of the main goals is to make it not just for the people who can afford it.
Let's go to Judy in Neshota. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'm calling just to say that I moved to Wisconsin from California. I was actually very tuned into the Monterey Bay Aquarium seafood list and really care about eating sustainable catch and wild fish, and it's frustrating how hard it is to find here in Wisconsin. And I probably have been a bit tentative about eating ocean or Great Lakes fish, and that's because I just don't know about the quality of it and what contaminants might be in it because of water pollution in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, and we've gotten a number of questions along the lines of the, you know, the water pollution and whether the fish is contaminated and whether it's safe to eat. I mean, the whitefish, is that considered safe to eat as far as you know?
So I think that in general, when you're looking at the fisheries, I heard a lot about how Lake Superior was a better choice than Lake Michigan. That said, like, you know, some of the whitefish coming out of Lake Michigan, I probably wouldn't eat it every day.
Yeah.
But I didn't do a very deep dive in this particular piece into things like contaminants in the individual fish. But I will say that hesitancy to eat ocean fish or to, like, you know, I think that that's totally common. People who've lived in Wisconsin their entire lives, I think it's very common to have kind of an arm's length attitude toward ocean fish, like, because again, like, you don't know necessarily where it came from. There are always these stories that come out, like, every few years, more often sometimes, that say, oh, all that tuna you thought you were eating, it's actually this other thing. You know, yeah. We did DNA testing. And so I think there's one of the things that these new companies that I was writing about and some of these new resources are trying to do is rebuild that trust. To say, this is a fishery that we know. These are fishermen that we know. We're going to get it to you quickly. And, you know, as I said, it comes with a cost. But I think that one of the things, the movements that I was seeing as I reported this piece, was that there's an interest in rebuilding that trust between the source and the diner.
Yeah. And Judy was, I guess, not hesitant to eat the ocean fish out of, off the shores of California, I guess.
Well, you can see it. Yeah. I used to go to a fishery in Morro Bay, California, when I lived out there, and it was great. It's right there. It's right there, and you can see it, and it's, and Monterey Bay is so close there, you know, so I get that. I totally get that.
And I got sick from eating oysters that had something wrong with them, and it might not have been contaminants from the ocean. And you have to just
One bad experience can turn somebody off.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I'm a pescatarian, by the way. Lisa on Facebook says, and we're almost out of time. We joined Sitka Salmon Shares and we receive a monthly shipment of sustainably caught fish. Our family will not purchase fish from questionable sources, and it really began to limit our options. This fish CSA has been wonderful, and you mentioned that you enjoyed it too.
Sitka's amazing. They're actually up in Alaska. They were up in Alaska this week with 3 Wisconsin chefs, taking them out to the boats, taking them out to see the catch coming in. So they're in Sitka right now. Oh, we've got some of our Wisconsin guys up there, and I thought that was great. They're actually just going up to see the fishery. So they're doing kind of a bit of a chef's junket, but I thought that was kind of cute.
That is great. In our final minute, you mentioned that some experts say the future of sustainable fish will be fish farming. And we have fish farming of trout right now in Wisconsin,
We
right?
do, in Palmyra, and a couple other places, too. The fish that is most likely to be farmed is going to be catfish, tilapia, and trout. As you said, it's going to be, a different breed of trout than you get out of the lake, so it's going to be a little smaller. It's going to be a little bit different. But I really do think that, carefully regulated aquaculture, especially like in Wisconsin, that's going to be the future for a lot of these fish. You go to any kind of a festival of foods, you're going to see a lot of those fish are farmed. And that's kind of, I think, as we start to figure that out and, improve those technologies year by year, that's going to be a huge part of the fish we eat in the future.
Lindsay, thanks very much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Lindsay Christians, fine arts and food writer for the Capital Times. She also is the host of the food podcast, The Corner Table. Thank you to Naeja Ellison and to Keely Bultina for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.